Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Mile High Hoops with Zach Bye.
What is up and welcome to another edition of the Mile High Hoops podcast. As always, I'm your host, Zach Bye, and I am joined here on the line by a guy that I've been meaning to connect with on this podcast for a little bit, and it is high time that we did connect. It is TJ McBride. He's a host of the Rocky Mountain Hoops, a podcast for Blue Wire Pods, and you can follow him on Twitter at TJ McBride NBA, one of my favorite Nuggets Twitter followers, reacting during the game and after it. So TJ, first of all, thank you for your time, man. Appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to finally come on and talk some hoops with you.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. First of all, let me ask you this, man. Let me ask you this. The Denver Nuggets start. You and I haven't connected on this, and I'm curious to hear your start or hear your answer to this. When the Nuggets are 1-4, how alarmed were you? Now, we know they've won four of their last five and have corrected some stuff defensively and are looking like they're figuring some stuff out. We can get to that in just a second. But when they're 1-4, how alarmed were you, like 1 out of 10?
I would probably say a 2. I was not alarmed at all. I knew coming into the season that with 7 new faces, the shortest offseason in NBA history, the shortest training camp in NBA history, and then the shortest preseason in NBA history, that there was just going to be a little bit of a learning curve this year. So taking into account all of the passion and intensity that the bubble required them to play with and how short the turnaround time was, I really wasn't surprised. I think it was more encouraging for me more than anything to see how dedicated Nikola Jokic was right out of the gate, to see so many of these smaller leaps from Jamal Murray still taking place right now for this team. I knew they weren't going to be as good defensively without Jeremy Grant, Mason Plumlee, and Torrey Craig, but overall, I was not concerned when they went 1-4. It felt very much so like a hangover from such a crazy run in that bubble without entering the most unpredictable NBA season to date.
Well, so you were a little bit more calm about it than I was. I kind of went into this thing, and not like I was like, you know, freaking out or hitting the panic button. I'd say my alarmness was like if you were a 2, I was maybe a 5, because of some of those, you know, reasons and departures that you kind of mentioned. I know opinions are pretty wide on the Jeremy Grant departure. Listeners of this podcast know that I thought it was a big deal. You know, for what he provided and who he was as a player, I thought he was the perfect fit. But you lose him, you lose Plumlee, you lose Torrey Craig. And maybe you isolate just one of those guys if you lost them. Maybe it wouldn't have moved the needle as much to me. But the departures of all three of them, I was like, oh, man, this is going to sting a little bit. And I know we're kind of looking in the rear view for just a second before we start talking about the way that the last week and a half has gone. On the Jeremy Grant thing, where did you come down on that? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, so when I look at the regular season without Jeremy Grant, I don't think it'll change much. And especially with how we're seeing JaMychal Green play now, this is what I envisioned his role kind of being. Regardless if he was starting or coming off the bench, he just is such a good, helpful player in his role that I thought that he would do a very good job of covering up all of the things that Jeremy Grant brought to the table. Still a very strong defender. Still a guy who can hit threes. He's not quite as athletic. He's not quite the defender he is. He doesn't raise the ceiling quite in the same way that Jeremy Grant does, but he raises the floor more so than Jeremy Grant does. So the stability that JaMychal Green was going to add in the regular season was something that I always bought into, even though they did lose Jeremy Grant. That all goes completely out of the window the second you start talking about the playoffs, and that is where all of my concerns lie. Mm-hmm. You need to have a jumbo wing who can defend these other opposing jumbo wings who can do whatever they want on a basketball court. If you can't match up with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and all of these hyper-athletic jumbo wings, you're not going to have a chance to slow these teams down in a half-court setting when you're playing them in a potential 7-game series. So in the regular season, I was not concerned. But when you start talking about the playoffs and where Denver's kind of tiered in that regard, I have them in that same tier as Utah, Dallas, Portland, Phoenix, as opposed to being up there with the Clippers and even making a competition with the Lakers because they lost a guy like Jeremy Grant.
Man, you and I are totally synced up on this. Totally synced up. I was of the mind that the Nuggets are still going to win a bunch of regular season games. They may be hosting a first-round series by the end of the regular season. But when you have to beat a team like the Clippers or the Lakers 4 times in 2 weeks, that is when that loss is going to be felt the most. So you and I are step in step with that one. Ultimately, we'll see how it plays out. But speaking of playing out, I mean, the Nuggets have seemingly found a little bit of rhythm here. They obviously start 1-4. There's people freaking out. I get it. You know, if you're passionate about the team, you're like, wait, what the hell is this? But here in the last week and a half, the Nuggets have won 4 of their last 5. Their only loss in there was to the Dallas Mavericks. And fans will remember that going into overtime. I thought it was a game that they could have had. They could have won 5 straight. But what is so different here in the last 5 games that was missing in the first 5, TJ?
The bench unit finally found some rhythm. They had a little bit of chemistry that they were finally able to build from. They were really a disaster in the first part of the season. The bench unit had all these new faces. It was a very weird group with a lot of small guards and playing with Millsap and Green. And what does Hardenstein add when he's not fouling? And everybody was still kind of feeling each other out. No one really knew how to put it all together quite yet. Now we're starting to see the benefits of finally getting reps. I've been trying to call these first like 15 games of the regular season basically extended training camp in preseason because that's how what it kind of works like for a lot of these players who are trying to get reps and trying to get that chemistry. So I'm not surprised to see that bench unit finally round back into shape. I think that's been the biggest difference, and I think the biggest point where this hinges all on is Jermichael Green. If you go look at his statistics for the on-off splits, you know, this is getting a little high frequency here, but every single one of the bench players that he has been playing with is at a minimum a plus 9.1 net rating when they play with him. It goes up to plus 32 with Facundo Campazzo on the court.
Wow.
He gave them this solidifying presence. He is spacing the floor. He can defend 3 positions. He will always play his role, and it kind of allowed everybody else to fall in line. And I think that has been the biggest difference maker so far, and I think we're going to see more of that keep playing out, but the question becomes, how does this shift when Michael Porter Jr. inevitably returns at some point, as we all assume? What does that do to the rotation? Because it's very difficult to play 11 guys. But right now, they found a group of 5 guys off the bench who play very well together to where they don't have to stagger Jamal Murray, and I think a lot of it revolves around Jermichael Green.
Man, I got to eat some crow on Jermichael Green. I did not see the fit working out quite this good, and I know we're still early in the season, but when he's out there, they're just a different group. And I definitely wasn't expecting, again, it's early, but I wasn't expecting him to shoot this well from 3. I mean, the guy's shooting 52% from behind the arc, and he's taking a legitimate amount. So I know it's a small sample, but I did not, like, I was pretty uninspired. And I tweeted this after the Jeremy Grant departure. The Nuggets had to pivot quickly. And I was just like, okay, you know, Jeremy Grant, he's a guy. You know, he can help out, maybe provide some depth. But I was wrong about him, man. They are a different group when he's available. And you can just take a look at the Knicks game. Like, and I don't have the box score in front of me, but I think he was a plus 24 in like 23 minutes. And I know it's one game, but it's kind of a microcosm of what he's brought to the table.
Yeah, if you go back even 6-7 years ago when he was playing for the Memphis Grizzlies, even when he was only taking 1 or 2 threes a game because the game was obviously just so different back then, he was still a mid-30s to high-30s three-point shooter. He always had this in his repertoire. And what's been so helpful for him is as the game has evolved, more people are looking for multi-positional defenders who can shoot 3,
yep,
who also are over 6'8". And he had already been that player and kind of got to become even more of it as the league had kind of grown around him. And I think what stands out the most about what allows him to be able to always complement winning basketball when he's on the court is he only plays within his role. I don't think you will ever see a record scratch moment from him where all of a sudden he's taken the shot that is extremely ill-advised early in the shot clock that throws off the rhythm. That doesn't exist in his mentality playing basketball. And that's why, in my opinion, he raises the floor of this Nuggets team much higher than Jeremy Grant ever did. It's not to say that Jeremy Grant didn't make them better.
Right.
Jeremy Grant raises the ceiling so much that it's a different conversation there. But having that floor raised in that way with him on the court is because he will always play his role the exact right way. He rolls to the rim and creates a good opportunity. He screens hard. He pops for 3 and he defends. And that's it. And that is how he has made his money. And there's a reason that every team he has been on has seemingly won basketball games when he's been on the court. So I was very excited about him. I do know that Tim Connelly and the Nuggets front office when they first got him after losing Jeremy Grant had like the biggest sigh of relief that at least they found somebody who is a legitimately very, very good starting level power forward to be able to replace him. And now they are finally able to reap the benefits of that. So I am very much so I'm encouraged, but I'm also not surprised at all by what JaMychal Green has done.
Well, I love it. I love the fit. You had an understanding of maybe something that I didn't, and I'm glad you were right on that one because it's been working out terrific with JaMychal Green. Let me ask you this, and you referenced it just a couple minutes ago. You know, in my notes here for this podcast today, as a bullet point for talking, I just wrote the word MPJ and then in quotes, situation. Is this a situation? Like what is going on? Any idea here?
So this is the thing that people need to remember is that the Nuggets are going to follow HIPAA laws when it comes to not saying any details about anything COVID related for any of their players. They are with us as media and fans are not obligated to have that information. Nothing about that is our responsibility to have. So the Nuggets are never going to confirm it. I would say pretty certainly that we are never going to find out from the Nuggets' mouth what actually has happened with Michael Porter Jr. With that being said, though, if we're going to take some, you know, some context clues out of this situation, the fact that we don't have a time frame for when he will return tells me that there is something else strange going on. And again, I'm not saying he has coronavirus. We have no idea. Nobody does, and nobody has been able to confirm that. But the cases that we have seen, an unidentified timetable to return has usually coincided with a positive corona test or coronavirus test. So maybe that's the case. Maybe it isn't. We really don't know. And all we have to do right now is really, in my opinion, hope that he does not have it, because people are treating the health and safety protocols that you keep seeing on injury reports like tweaked ankles, in my opinion. And when you start looking a little deeper at what this virus does to even the most in shape and young athletes that you can come across, you're talking about lung scarring and enlarged hearts and players collapsing in college games and people not actually being able to have the correct depth perception. There's so many other things, and I just really hope that when people think about Michael Porter Jr.'s situation, it's not with frustration that we don't know, it's with hope that he is okay. Because that's really the reality that we have to contend with here, because it's not a tweaked ankle. This isn't him all of a sudden having fatigue and needing to rest for a couple days.
Right.
This could potentially be something very dramatic, and I hope people take it that way, because we probably will never actually find out unless Porter himself decides to tell us.
Well, I thought that was really well said, TJ, and it's something that I think that we need to have a bit of a sensitivity to. I know that, you know, because Michael Porter Jr. and some of the stuff that he has said has sort of cast himself in a bit of a negative light to some people as it relates to this, and maybe there's an assumption that, you know, all the assumptions, you know what they are, right? They're out there on social media, and it's interesting because the dynamic from an on-court perspective with Michael Porter Jr., it felt a bit disjointed is the way that I would describe it when he was there. And he's only now, as the days keep going on, like Michael Porter Jr. has now played in less than half of the games, just four basketball games for MPJ, and they were 1-3 during that time. What did you make of, just from a basketball standpoint, what you saw during those games with Michael Porter Jr. and the rest of the Nuggets?
Is that he has an incredible amount of talent that has no refinement to it in terms of how it fits with the Nuggets yet. And this was what everybody expected. And the only way that you can rectify this issue is to play him with the players that you want him to play with down the line. So everybody knew it was going to be choppy to start the year. Nobody expected them to walk in like and just be able to run a flawless offensive set with Michael Porter Jr. suddenly roaming around like Paul George, knowing how to take advantage of his off-ball gravity to get looks for others. Like, nobody anticipated that Michael Porter Jr. coming out of the gate. But even with that being said, there was a level of, wow, the scoring potential is so terrifyingly real that you just have to keep playing them even if you're losing, because if this even remotely clicks, there is just serious championship hopes for the future, and not just singular, but competing for multiple years for a title. So I made it so far. I was very unimpressed because it was always going to be that way. His defense was a disaster. He's still trying to figure out a play with Murray. There's only one basketball on the court for all of them.
Right.
There's the conversation of, is it Will Barton or is it Michael Porter? Is he actually going to dedicate himself to being a good rebounder? All of these things are completely still out there up for debate. And until he can get back and actually play and get enough reps for us to take actual conclusions away, right now he is still just a theory, in my opinion. So I'm just waiting to see him play basketball again. And until he does, he is just a non-factor. And that's how Michael Malone has to play this. They've had to move on without him because they have no idea what the future holds. And hopefully he can get back and start showing what he can do. But Denver's got to keep moving forward with Will Barton right now and get ready to be able to win basketball games.
Yeah, and they don't have a choice, right? Like, you don't have a choice. You got to keep playing. But part of the thing that feeds into the narrative and the dynamic is that the Nuggets are now winning without him. And yes. I think it's a natural progression of thought to be like, okay, like maybe the dynamic is better. And obviously he's so freaking talented. Like you said, you have to play him. But I just don't know how Mike Malone is going to handle this. Like, Mike Malone is a certain type of cat that is facing real expectations with this basketball team. And I'm just fascinated, like, how does Mike Malone handle Michael Porter Jr. when he's back? If you've won, you know, 7 of your last 9 or 10 of your last 12 or whatever it could look like when he's back, that's a delicate situation there for Malone.
Yeah, and let's use some deductive reasoning here and look at this Nuggets team as a whole when Porter is playing well. Even when he gives you 19 and 10, is he impacting the game to win basketball as much as you're going to see Will Barton doing it? Probably not right now. And
right.
It's not a knock on Porter. He has to learn all of the other minutia of the game. He can be a walking double-double with 20 points in his sleep whenever he wants, so long as he gets the requisite shots to get there. The next thing I would say as well, using the same deductive reasoning, is the Nuggets front office wants Porter to play, and they are not mandating Michael Malone to give him any set minutes. I have heard of zero mandates, so I wanted to make sure that I prefaced this beforehand. But when you see the Nuggets renounce the cap hold they have for Torrey Craig, making him an unrestricted free agent instead of cutting the non-guaranteed contract of Blacko Chanchar, that is a very, very revealing decision by the front office, in my opinion, because that does clearly open the way to, even if he's not starting, Michael Porter Jr. is playing 20-plus minutes a night. So I think that the Nuggets front office really wants him to play, and they understand that this is their way to truly contending sooner rather than later. But I also think that Michael Malone is very well aware that they're not going to win basketball games right away doing it that way. So it's a tough position for everybody involved, especially now that Porter's not even with the team, not practicing, not in meetings, not figuring out what defensive issues they're having, not there for all of these alterations that Michael Malone has put in place. So that is just incredibly combustible. And I'm not sure how it's going to play out, or if Michael Porter will get frustrated if he's not starting with the return, or if Barton does, which I highly doubt. Barton has never, ever, ever, ever made an issue about his role in that locker room. But we'll have to just wait and see. There is a lot of moving parts when it comes to that. And it's really just going to take time, which is very, very frustrating, because the Nuggets need to know what's going on sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I think that was well said. And the one word that kind of resonated with me there is combustible. I do think that's the appropriate language to use. It feels like it could be that exact scenario. But again, we don't have the answers right now. And the hardest thing to do is just wait. Right now, you just got to wait, and hopefully the Nuggets continue to win games without him starting at the time of recording this evening in Brooklyn. You mentioned Will Barton, TJ. It's been a bit of an up and down season, or a start to a season for Will Barton. Questions about his health are there. What have you made of his role here?
So I would say I expected the slow start finishing at the rim. This is a guy coming off of a knee injury after this bubble scenario in which there was a whole lot of chaotic offseason, and now he's trying to get back into a rhythm without training camp, without preseason that was so truncated once again. So I think that that very much so fits in this exact same conversation. Will Barton needs reps and needs to get in shape to be able to play at his peak, and that just takes playing basketball, which they haven't been able to do much of. So I've actually been encouraged by Will Barton's play because his selflessness as a playmaker has been really important for that offense. I go back and I look at what happened against Utah, against the Clippers, and against the Lakers in the playoffs. They were just blitzing Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic every single time and just begging them to pass it to anybody else to try and make a play. They didn't have another creator on the other end of the floor that they could pass it to and run supplementary offense on the opposite side of the court.
Right.
Will Barton has provided that in spades this year. And that's the difference between the Nuggets being a bogged down offense that becomes predictable and this just awesome juggernaut that we've seen this year. They finally have that versatility with the amount of playmakers they have, and that is because Will Barton is on the court. So I've actually been quite encouraged with Will Barton's overall mentality and how he's approached the basketball game. I knew the finishing would take a second. I knew the defense would take a second. He has had some mental lapses, which is not encouraging because you never want to see guys get cut back door on and things like that. But overall, I think Will Barton has helped the Nuggets more than he has hurt them. And I think overall, his ability to create offense on the other side of the court has been instrumental in their ability to be unguardable. And that has been their identity this season because the defense has come and gone, but that offense has been there every single night, even when they're losing. So that is something that I think is very important. So I think Will Barton will actually start to improve as the season goes along. I think you'll start to see him get more explosive as he gets more reps. You'll start to see the finishes at the rim a little bit better in the same way that Gary Harris is now doing it, now that he's finally feeling more healthy. And once that starts to happen, then the Nuggets are in an even better spot.
Yeah, and you mentioned finishing at the rim for Will. He has looked like he has lost a little bit of pep in his step because of that injury. But I'll tell you this, I was at the game last Tuesday on January 5th on the second of the back-to-back with Minnesota. And it was encouraging to see him. And look, it was just one particular play, but he was on the left wing and had some space and was able to take off and throw it down. And he had his best game of the season, I thought, that night. Finished with 20 points. He got to the line. Really encouraging. And a shot 50%. And like you said, you know, I think the best days of Will Barton are coming here in terms of this season are right around the corner as he gets healthier and more comfortable. So I'm with you on that. You mentioned Gary Harris. Don't look now, but Gary Harris has shot 50% or better in four straight games. 15 points a game he's averaging in those four games. I mean, he had five threes against the 76ers. TJ, I had to go back to November of 2018 in a game against the Bucks where he made six the last time he shot it like that from beyond the arc. What have you made of his it's not some sort of month sample size, but it does feel like an offensive resurgence for Gary.
Yeah, as probably one of the last residents of Gary Harris Island, I am encouraged by the start. But let's be very, very clear. The three-point shot is not real until we have a 30-game-plus sample size. That is just the end-all, be-all part of this conversation. He has had moments where he's hit a few threes in a three-straight game stretch and then went 0 of 21 over the next seven games.
Right.
So when it comes to the three-point shot, he has to prove it. There is just no getting around that. But still, there are things that we can take away from how Gary Harris has played that I find very important. The first bucket of the last game they played, when Nikola Jokic passes it to Gary Harris, he attacks the closeout, and there's no defense to the rim, and he dunks it. There is a point where Noah Vonleh rotates over, and Gary Harris, 9 times out of 10, when he's not comfortable, goes up for a reverse layup instead of dunking it.
Yep.
And to see him say, no, I'm going hard, I'm not settling, and I'm either going to draw a foul or I'm putting this in the hole, he did it. And that is the most encouraging part for me of watching Gary Harris. That mentality of I'm no longer settling for floaters and mid-range jumpers when the first thing falls apart. I'm getting to the rim or I'm getting off the ball and I'm letting somebody else create and we can just run it back. And that has been the most encouraging thing for me for Gary Harris's offense. Because when he can finish at the rim like this, it will open up the rest of his game because teams are going to be scared Jared as him back cutting and are going to play off him, which will give him a little bit more room to shoot. So anything you can do to help yourself as a three-point shooter when you've been a bad three-point shooter for 3 years is always helpful, and it'll do a lot for the Nuggets to put pressure on the rim by getting Gary Harris going downhill again.
Yep. Yep, well said. Love it. Hope to see that trend continue because, like we said, like you just said, we haven't seen enough of a sample to think that his overall offensive regression is gonna spike the other way here. Seven, eight, 10 games into the season, so we'll see. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for Gary. Shame on me for waiting this long into this conversation to isolate Nikola Jokic and the level of basketball that he's playing right now, TJ. I've never seen him play better. I mean, he's averaging over 24 points a game. He's a top 20 scorer in the league. He's a top 10 rebounder in the league, over 11 per game. And he's top 5, too, exactly, to be specific, with assists per game, with about 10.5. I believe he's only trailing James Harden in that category. This guy, man, he has, man, I'll say this, and you touched on it in passing earlier in the conversation. When he... I'll just be honest. I was disappointed the way he showed up to the last season, within the calendar year of him signing that monster deal. I was disappointed. And I, for years, have challenged on this podcast saying, can you, with conviction, tell me that Nikola Jokic has turned his life over to this, that it is his life commitment to be the greatest basketball player he can? And I've bucked up against that in years past because you can't tell me that that's true while you look like that. Now, I know he runs a little bit heavy anyway, but it wasn't as heavy as he has been playing at in recent years. But when he comes to the bubble in the shape that he was in, but then doubles down and shows up to this season in finding that balance of being trimmed down, but also can still play with power on the low block, and we've seen that. Man, I just think like sky is the freaking limit for this guy, and I think we're seeing the best version of him right now.
Yeah, what's so fascinating is that even at the start of last season and at the end of the season before, he's the same weight he is now. What changed is that in December, he started to work out after every single game. Yep. And it wasn't just that particular workout, but that is the perfect example of the dedication that Nikola Jokic has given to the weight room that has changed his game. He already has 6 dunks. He had 9 last year, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So, and I know that seems so trivial because he's 7 foot. Like, of course he dunks when he's around, but he clearly feels lighter. He clearly is willing to go up and actually put it on top of people. Like, we've seen 1 foot jumping, one hand hammer dunks
yep.
from Nikola Jokic this year. And I do think that that does speak to a willingness for him to dedicate himself to the weight room. I think he's always been dedicated to basketball, but I think he was trying to figure out what exactly was needed for him to get to the next level. And I think he found it when it came to this weight room regiment that he is now working with. So that is huge. And then on top of that, I mean, my God, this offensive built roster around Nikola Jokic is just effortless. Like, when you have this many additional playmakers and shooters and bigs who can do multiple things for you and just insane offensive talent potential, like guys like Michael Porter and Jamal Murray, that just gives Nikola Jokic just endless toys to play with. And you can just let him sit there and play for hours and just destroy everyone in front of him. And we have now seen that with 10 straight double-doubles to begin the season, which have not been all rebounds. There have been like 4 games
right.
in which he missed his triple-double by a single rebound.
Yep.
He's averaging like 11.5 assists a game. He already broke his record for most assists in a single game this year. He's been insane. I don't think that I have ever seen Nikola Jokic in the regular season play this well. I might even say, I don't think I have ever seen his passing this impactful, period.
Yeah, no.
It's been mesmerizing.
And how can I sit here and disagree? Like, your eyes are telling the story as much as the stat sheet is. I mean, you're talking about, like, the game, especially the way he started this season in the assist column, 14, 10, 18, and 12, and followed by 11 and 12 again. Now, it's gone down a little bit here in the last week, but his scoring has been terrific. 35 against Timberwolves, 38 against Dallas. So I think he's picking his spots a little bit, and part of that is what the defense is trying to buckle down with him. So he's just, maximizing his opportunity. But, man, I took a flyer on him, I took a flyer on him for MVP at plus 1,000 before the season started. And if the Nuggets had, you know, just won one or two of those games, Sacramento, Dallas, I think you'd be hearing even more about Nikola Jokic than we are right now, just because the record isn't great.
I would say the voting base for MVP is already saying that Nikola Jokic is a top three candidate right now. I don't think there's any debate about that with how good he's been. Like, Nikola Jokic is breaking the fabric of what centers are supposed to do in basketball right now.
Yep.
And he's doing it every night, and he's doing it without breaking a sweat. And it's absolutely jarring to watch it happen because, like, he's just lumbering, doing whatever he wants, and it doesn't matter. And what's even crazier is that right now, Nikola Jokic, he's creating way more assists than he's actually getting credited for because guys have missed so many shots at the rim.
Yep.
His assist numbers should actually look higher than they actually are if the Nuggets even finish at a remotely league average level for the few players who have not. So I honestly find myself just flabbergasted watching him. And like, I was at his very first summer league, sitting next to Adam Matez of DNVR, talking about, like, this Nikola guy could be really good, but, like, let's just wait and see, and watching his first summer league game. So from that to get to here, and I've watched every single game, I still find myself just stunned watching him play basketball.
It's incredible. What he's doing right now is absolutely incredible. And you used a phrase there that I think perfectly describes where we're at with him when you said every night. It feels like every single night Nikola is completely locked in. And I'm not saying that, like, in years past, he's been like loosey-goosey or didn't take things seriously. But I'm just seeing a different level of seriousness right now.
I would say that he has taken it very much less serious than he has taken it this time. Like, if you want to know if Nikola Jokic is serious for a particular basketball game, which, of course, his lowest level of serious is still serious.
Sure.
I'm not saying Jokic doesn't care about basketball.
Right.
But look at how he gets into the post and look at how he runs around screens. If he's, like, literally sprinting into the chest of guys to try and create a seal down low early in the shot clock, that is a different Nikola Jokic than the guy who hovers around the high post and just tries to pass all day. There are, like, clear differences, and Nikola Jokic has not been anywhere near passive this year, and I do not remember a stretch of games in the regular season for this period of time in which he has refused to be passive in this way.
Yeah, no, and he's taken more shots than ever in his career, which I love, and that speaks to the not being passive, but he's shooting the best percentage of his career through 10 games. Now, I know it's early, but when you play with that level of assertion and you have the skills that Nikola has, he has the ability to shoot, you know, 58% from the floor. So it is, and then you also look at the rebounding numbers, you know, in terms of the level of assertion and him being locked in every single night. You know, we're not seeing him have nights that he takes off on the glass, really. So for him to go from, you know, averaging 9-something a year ago to him being over 11, I think it speaks to this just entire conversation that we're having with him, that somehow a guy who finished in the top 5 in MVP a couple years ago has somehow gotten better. But it's true. I mean, seeing is believing. It's true. So,
and he's gotten better every year. And to take it a step further, we are discrediting Nikola right now by not talking about his defense.
Right.
Which Denver's defense as a team has not been great. Nikola Jokic has been as good defensively on a consistent basis as I have ever seen him this year. Like, he has been locked in, hedging hard, blocking shots at the rim, getting into passing lanes, and like you said, defensive rebounding like a monster, refusing to let anything go and be easy. And the foul trouble has been concerning. Obviously, that's indicative of his effort on defense.
Right.
He is fouling more again. But I think that is probably the biggest factor, is that it's not just that Nikola Jokic is passable anymore. We have eclipsed the idea that Nikola Jokic is at best an average defender. Nikola Jokic is showing that he can be an above average defender at the center position in a similar Marc Gasol-esque way. And the more and more and more the Nuggets can finally start to fine-tune this defense around him, it's just going to get better. And Jamal Murray getting better at the same time that Nikola is on defense has shown itself in those spurts in which both of them are locked in, and suddenly the Nuggets are going on 18-2 runs, and there's just nothing opposing teams can do. So I think that it needed to be said. That's one of the most important parts of Nikola Jokic's season, in my opinion.
And you talked about the defense. I want to talk about the macro there here before we let you go. The defense for the Nuggets started the season really bad. You know, make no mistake.
Yeah.
But here, within the last handful of games that they've won these games, it feels like they're, even despite losing those games just a couple weeks ago, it feels like they're a different team defensively here in the last week and a half. Is that fair?
It's not. And I'm not saying that because it's obvious, because it absolutely isn't. When you start looking at the stats, the Nuggets have not been allowing any three-pointers all year long. They're not allowing shots at the rim all year long. Those first four games, even though the Nuggets weren't allowing a lot of those shots, teams were shooting like the most unsustainable level from those different spots on the floor. So Denver's defense has not shifted. Denver's defense is doing exactly what it has been doing, which is we're taking away the highest percentage areas for you, which is the three-point line and the at-the-rim numbers. And Denver doing that over and over again, refusing to fold even when things were bad to start the year, gave them the foundation to be defending well as they have recently. So I think that the first four or five games were almost more of an anomaly considering their scheme than it was a sustainable action for Denver to have to deal with.
Okay, I like that. I like that little synopsis there, TJ. Let me ask you this before we go. And thanks again for being here with me today.
Of course.
Who do you think the Nuggets can be this season? Earlier in the conversation, you kind of, relegated them to, the tier with Utah and maybe Phoenix instead of the upper echelon of the West. In terms of your projection on who they can be, has that taken a step back year over year?
I don't know about year over year, but this year it did, just because they don't have the particular wing defenders that you just have to have to be able to have playoff success against these elite teams. That is the only reason that I felt that way. And on top of that, you could all of a sudden have Michael Porter Jr. take a gigantic leap around game 50 this year, where the defense just finally starts to make sense for him, and then the entire equation shifts abruptly. So Denver has the talent and the makeup to on a less than 0% chance, still win a title this year. They're not out of the question in anything right now, but their overall ability to reach their overall peak is just so much more of a difficult road, in my opinion, now. And you have to rely on Michael Porter Jr. taking a massive leap. You have to rely on Gary Harris getting back to who he was, and everybody staying healthy, and Paul Millsap being able to stave off, Father Time for one more year. There's a lot of things you need to hope to happen to be able to get to that point that you didn't need to hope as much about last year, but that does not mean that Denver is still not right there. They are a piece away, or somebody taking a gigantic leap away from putting themselves right back into that conversation among the Clippers and the Lakers and the Bucks. It's just going to take time to see if they actually have that within them, because we knew they did with Jeremy Grant. We don't know where Michael Porter Jr. is at right now. And until we can answer that question, we are just going to have to wait and see.
That's where we're at right now. It is a definite wait and see time period right now for the Nuggets, but they're back to 500. By the time that you listen to this, they likely have played already Brooklyn, so we'll see what happens with that. Pretty bizarre scenario going on in Brooklyn right now with Kyrie Irving, and the dynamic I have questioned for this entirety of this Brooklyn Nets conversation, him and KD pairing up. You want to care to share any thought about what's going on there in Brooklyn?
I've really tried to have as much compassion for players' feelings about when they want to play and when not to, especially when the world is on the brink of so much, destruction and chaos on so many different fronts right now. But it's so difficult to defend a guy when the video comes out of him at these birthday parties, unmasked or whatever was happening. So yeah. I'm trying to have compassion for players in a very chaotic time. I hope he's doing well. I hope his mental health's good. I hope he's taking care of his chicken, as Marshawn Lynch says.
Yep.
And that's really all the thought that I have on it. I just hope that guys like Michael Porter, him, the entire Celtics roster seemingly, are all just okay, and that people are able to handle this, and guys like Carl Anthony Towns are able to handle the tragedies that they are faced with. So that's really my only take on that stuff right now.
Well, I think that's the perfect way to end it here, TJ. TJ McBride, man, keep up the great work. Thank you so much for coming by here today, and I can promise you it won't be the last time I ask.
It was an absolute pleasure to talk some hoops with you, man. I can't wait to come back on.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. You know, whatever happens in the next couple days, that we'll be talking about it right here on the Mile High Hoops podcast.
Oh, hey, didn't realize you were listening. Well, let's make this quick. And don't touch that dial. We're Rocky Mountain Forest Products, and we're not aggressive. We're passionate. And we're not going to blast you with facts you don't need. But when you do, visit rmfp.com. Whether you're in need of fencing, decking, or siding information, it's all there. And best of all, it's free. No one likes a salesman, so we're not going to sell you. Whether you need the info or not, just remember rmfp.com. You do you, Colorado. You do you.